throughout all of history, they've only talked about the fame, never the hard work, never the elbow grease, never the early call time.
Good morning, early call time.
All right, all right, all right.
This is JJ on the mic.
Hey.
On the three.
J Master Geiger.
What's the three?
The third channel.
On the ones and twos.
You're on
also
channel
known
three.
As the three.
Yep.
I'm exactly. On channel. What channel am I on?
You're on one.
Oh,
got those ones.
One.
Let me hear those twos. Where are those twos at?
That's you.
Naughty on the twos.
Yeah. And Mark Padavina is on the four.
Hello.
Boom.
Mark is an editor on the current hit show Lucifer on Fox.
Wow.
Is it about the devil?
It is about the devil.
It's a great show, by the way.
Thank you.
When you're going through notes, are you like, well, I think, guys, that the devil is in the details?
No. Yeah.
I almost jumped out off of this couch to strangle you.
Slapped your mouth.
To just strangle the life out of you.
Well, awesome.
That was a good dad joke.
Thanks.
See, the worst.
The funny thing is, though, the show actually does pointed itself in like, oh, like in the music, mm-hmm. they have a lot of music that has the devil in the, you know, in the lyrics.
There's definitely some winks in there.
Oh, yeah.
Running with the devil. Anyway.
We have not used that one yet.
Yeah.
Devil went down to Georgia.
But we've kind of toned down the devil music. There's been a point where we kind of went overboard with it.
Okay.
They kind of dialed it back in the notes process.
I think by episode 5, it starts coming, like settling down.
Yeah. So I think it's about being more selective. And I got to say, in this show, I think it took us a little longer to find our voice musically than in past shows I've worked with.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, coming from the fake empire camp of Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage,
mm-hmm.
those guys are just brilliant with music. They know exactly what they want. And, you know, so it was a little bit of kind of a more cooks in the kitchen kind of deal on the show. And we're just trying to find our voice.
Gotcha.
We actually got a lot of input from Tom Ellis, the lead.
Oh, really?
On the show. Oh, yeah. He would send us notes. You could look on Spotify. He's got his own playlists.
Oh, shit.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So it's cool.
Is that the first time you've ever had an actor kind of chime in on the music that you're going
to
use?
I mean, he's never poo-pooed or said no to anything. He doesn't get that kind of input.
Yeah.
But there's definitely suggested songs. Like, I think a lot of it filters through with, like, playback. If they're in a club, a lot of times, like, a song he likes will end up on playback. And
yeah.
We'll just kind of roll with it.
And he's a singer, too, isn't he?
He
sort of?
He has sung on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Shit. I don't know if he's actually got a recording career that I'm aware of.
Did he play piano as well, or is that fake?
I believe it's real. I didn't cut that episode, so I can't really give you the...
That was the last one I watched, so...
He did really sing it, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You could definitely tell it was recorded. Well, I mean, like, you know how you can tell, like, when they cut in a singer's voice?
Right,
yeah.
You know, it's
like, oh, that sounds a couple octaves in the wrong direction.
Well, no, it feels like it was definitely recorded.
Right.
And then just put over.
It's not nat sound, as we like to say.
Natural sound. They did record. He wanted to do it both ways, and they actually, that was an issue in pre-production where they kind of fought to have him record it first as a backup.
Oh, I see.
Because when nat sound goes wrong, it goes incredibly wrong.
Yeah.
Fuller House.
Not to knock him, but.
They did it on Fuller House.
Oh, did
Jesse
they?
Jesse Consopolis sings in the pilot.
A Fuller House?
Yeah.
Or Full House?
Fuller. The new one.
You guys actually watched that?
I saw the pilot. I
didn't watch it, but I definitely added stuff to the frequently asked questions section on its IMDb page.
Oh.
You're the guy that comments without actually watching it?
Did you know that they don't moderate that section?
I can guess.
Well, they don't.
Wait, have you commented on my profile?
No. What I like to do is
soon.
I like to go to TV shows that like people don't think to like go and like check that section. So I did Full House. I did Fuller House. I think we did Speed, but like they've already changed some of them back. My favorite question was what else has the actress that played Kimmy Gibbler been on?
Oh.
Do you guys know what the answer is?
Nothing.
It's Full House.
Oh.
Ooh, that's like a trick question.
Well, I mean, it's a different show, you know.
What color was Washington's white horse?
I guess so.
Was it white? No, it wasn't.
It was a trick question.
I don't know my Washington history.
Well, let's talk about Lucifer some more.
Now the answer to that question is going really.
It's white.
It's white, right?
It's white.
Okay, cool.
What was the question?
It's part of the question.
What color was the white horse?
No.
White.
It's white. No, I know. I'm just checking.
It was a little bit of a cream.
I'm just checking that you guys know.
Mark, I'd like to ask you a serious question.
What were the redcoats wearing?
Redcoats.
Like that kind of question?
Yeah.
They were redcoats. They were wearing coats.
What was your favorite part about working on Lucifer this season?
I mean, for me, number one, I got to say that the crew, like the writing crew, and especially our showrunner, Joe Henderson, were absolutely great. Mm-hmm. Got tons and tons of positive feedback from them, and I felt like I was kind of more involved on a collaborative level. Like, I felt like they were really open to ideas, and
yeah,
it was just a lot of fun to work with them. And I mean, for me personally, I felt like it was a very nice departure coming out of teen dramas and women's dramas. I mean,
yeah,
if you look at my resume, right, everything I've cut as an editor is basically Gossip Girl, Carrie Diaries, Astronaut's Wives Club.
Yeah.
Which, you know, those were all great for me, especially Astronaut's Wives Club, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And I got no complaints coming from that, but it was kind of a refreshing departure to get into something a little more supernatural and a little bit of the police procedural. It had a nice little twist to everything. It was just kind of fun on top of it
all. Got a little bit of action in some parts.
Yeah. It doesn't take itself too seriously, which I pretty much never do with myself.
Right.
Does it shoot here?
I'm sorry?
Does it shoot here?
It shoots in Vancouver, unfortunately. That's a bit of an issue.
But it's actually, you can't tell. I mean, because they shoot a lot of exteriors.
Yeah, wait till we get to the winter shoots.
Oh. Yeah, makes sense.
It's always a bit of an issue. I mean, we did do LA units for some, like, key exteriors. Like, every episode, every other episode has like a scene or two.
Oh, so yeah.
You'll see landmarks like the Walk of, like, Hollywood Walk of Fame and like the
Disney Santa Monica Pier and
stuff like that. Yeah,
where do they shoot?
Vancouver.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I'm hoping if it comes back for season two that there's like a chance in hell, pun intended, wink, wink, that it comes back to LA. But
yeah,
I know it's pretty unlikely. It almost never happens.
Yeah.
You know, but
now this was actually from a comic book. Yes. Originally. Mm-hmm. Did you read the comic book before you started editing on the show?
I did when I got the job.
You did?
I was not like, I'm not the biggest comic book guy in the world. Yeah. I just kind of stopped reading X-Men when I was in middle school, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
But I read like the first, like, I guess, volume of the book, and it's very heady stuff, and it's definitely kind of watered down for television.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of interested in how like the feedback would be from the fanboys would be.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of figured they were going to hate us, and it doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah.
I think they've kind of accepted us for what we are. I mean, I'm sure you can go online to some message board and find somebody that's really like butthurt over it, but at the end of the day, you know.
Yeah. Did the comic book ever go into hell?
It did. A lot more than we do in the show.
Okay. Because I don't think you've been in hell at all in the show. Oh, you can't say. I see. Zipped. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, as of right now that have aired, I have not seen
it. I mean, I will say this. The show is definitely focused on Los Angeles and Lucifer's adventures in L.A.
Is Los Angeles not hell?
That's a very good question.
It's a level of hell.
It is. Pretty but, I mean,
it's one of the rings.
There's definitely ways to interpret it, but like, I think that enough of the story, like, to me, the broadcast version of this story is about Lucifer's time in Los Angeles. You know, that's the interesting part with him dealing with his mortality and kind of him tactlessly charming his way through the mortal world.
Yeah.
Is the best way I can describe
it. Yeah, yeah.
Because he's got, like, in a lot of ways, he has no tact. He'll say anything to anybody and get away with it.
Yeah.
I know individuals in life that are like that. And I start to wonder if they're the devil. But
how do they get through life, you know? How can
with a good smile and good looks, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can't do it.
He is, I'll tell you one thing, he is charming as hell. When you watch him on screen.
I'll tell you this. He is also, in all the shows I've worked on, I've never worked with like a more kind of bona fide leading man. Like, he is basically to cut him. You know, you're an editor yourself. Yeah, yeah. When you're cutting, no matter what quality show you're on, you're gonna have your problem scenes and your problem moments where something, a beat was missed or whatever.
Yeah.
And on this show in general, when in doubt, you could just cut to Tom and you're good.
No shit.
Like, the problem is when you're in a scene that he's not in. You're like, oh shit, now
right,
what?
Right. Well, see, I felt like that with Anna Sophia Robb.
Yeah, that's true. She's actually very good.
Yeah, she was very good. Like, you could just take whatever it was. Yeah, I mean, you could go with about any take and But it's really nice to work with actors that, you know, do their homework. So
the way I see it is, whatever happens with the show, if we don't come back or it only goes one more season, whatever, I think he's going to be a huge, huge star regardless. I think he's got that little something, you know.
Oh, no, you can definitely tell. I mean, I you know, when you watch a show and you know that it's a certain actor, like, I believe that he is the devil when I watch the show.
No.
Yeah, he's that good.
Pretty convincing.
Like, I completely... Huh? I'm like, yeah, that's him. Yep, that's it.
And I won't name names, but you know, from being in the room with directors and stuff like that, you hear some of the horror stories from set about dealing with certain actors who are divas and this and that.
Sure.
I hear nothing but great things about Tom. Everybody that's I've wonderful. Been in the room with who's been on set with him loves the guy.
What type of horror stories do you hear of... you don't have to say actors or directors or anything,
you
but like...
Yeah, you don't have
like
to.
Like, what are...
I mean, I've worked
what are set about... Like, what makes an actor difficult?
I've worked on shows that have gone six seasons, and I won't name names, but you could go on IMDb and probably figure it out.
Yep.
If you really want to know. Yeah. And some Alf. Of the, some, yes. Actually, it was Max Headroom.
But, oh, nice.
It's a good show, too.
No, but like, there's some young actors and actresses who basically were raised on the show, and they kind of took for granted at the end of it what got them there. And they, you could just tell they were bigger than the show.
Mm-hmm.
You'd see them before and after. They call the action or cut, and you just see them rolling their eyes, picking up their cell phones, and then you talk to the directors, and they'd be like, "Oh, I couldn't get so and so out of their trailer all day. You know, we were waiting on set for 3 hours for them. You know, and they really just kind of checked out.
Yeah.
And I mean, then there's some people I got to say who like Leighton Meester in Gossip Girl. If she didn't want to be there at the end, she never showed it. She was a total pro. You know, but I got to say, like, horror stories that's a gross exaggeration. But there's definitely egos at play, you know.
Right.
People grow up beyond a show, and it becomes an obligation to them after a while.
Yeah, and that's an aspect of working on a show too.
I mean, I get like that in the cutting room after six seasons. Mark, cut this. So. Hold on, let me get out of my trailer.
Yeah. Wish we had trailers. That'd be nice. But we pretty much stay in a cave all day. Yeah, so
exactly.
Yeah,
got some fancy toys in it sometimes.
Yeah. You know, one of the. The coolest thing about your bay, actually, is the art that you always put up.
Oh, yeah. It's been traveling with me for a while.
Yeah. Skateboards, paintings.
My skateboards are now hanging in my kitchen at home.
Nice.
I kind of got tired of moving those around.
So. Yeah. You have a Frankenstein painting.
Yeah.
That I really like. Did you do that yourself?
No. My friend Chris did. He goes by Gigantic. He's a bit of a street artist.
Oh, nice.
So he's kind of been semi-retired for a little bit, you know. I kind of play this for him and maybe give him a little nudge,
yeah,
a little poke in the ribs and get him back out there. But you know,
and you actually went to art school.
I did.
That's how you got your start. Right?
Yeah,
yeah. What school did you go to?
I went to Pratt Institute in Brooklyn.
Pratt Institute. Oh yeah. Didn't we shoot something at Carrie Diaries?
Gossip Girl.
It was Gossip Girl. Yeah, yeah.
Actually, Carrie Diaries might have shot there too.
It was some exterior, like, I went to school there.
Yeah, they shot outside the engineering building. I could, like, locate exactly where they were, but.
That's cool.
That's how you guys know each other, through Gossip Girl, right?
Yeah, Diaries, yep.
I remember the first time I hung out with the two of you for the first time.
Lotzos.
I remember the first time I met JJ at Brandon Lott's house.
Yeah, yeah. It was a birthday party for Declan, I think.
I guess so.
Yeah, or barbecue or something that he had.
Barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was barbecue involved with Brandon.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I remember you hit me up, JJ, and you're like, "Oh, hey, I'm going to go get some barbecue with my friend Mark. You should come." I was like, "Oh, okay, sure, pick me up." You picked me up.
And pay for me.
I did.
Took you to Compton.
No, I mean we were neighbors. Exactly. I didn't know we were going to Compton. All of a sudden, I'm just like, "Geez, we've been on the freeway for a while."
Yeah, we ate there.
Wow.
And keep in mind that Mark is wearing all blue, and JJ is wearing all red.
Good call.
It was pretty sweet.
And I forgot that.
I couldn't forget it. And we're just three white boys getting some Compton barbecue.
It was delicious.
We had our own little gang war in the car.
It was the best shit I ever had.
Yeah. What were we saying?
And then I went to Austin, and it ruined it all.
Have you guys checked out the Bloodsos on La Brea?
It's good, but not the same.
It's not the same restaurant.
The guys from Golden State basically bought the rights to it, and you could tell they have the recipes. And like I said,
it's way too fancy, but there's also
something about like that smoker in the back of Bloodsos in Compton,
and the cats
basically been used for the last 20 something years.
Storefront,
basically.
Yeah,
you barely go inside the building.
There's just that little something you can't recreate, but it's still like I'd go back. It's fine.
Yeah, it's a 5x5 room where you order, and then you know hopefully there's benches outside for you.
Yeah.
Well, I'm telling you, if you have not been though, go get brisket in Texas and it'll change everything. Yeah. It'll ruin it all for you here.
Was it Salt Lick?
No, I went to a spot called
Brisket.
Salt
Lick is for horses.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
shut up.
No, but I went to a spot called La Barbecue. It's like actually a food truck.
Oh.
They have like the smoker outside and they serve it out of a truck. And it's basically in Austin. And we were going to go to Franklin's or Salt Lick, the ones with the big lines, and we were on limited time. So this got recommended to us, and I sat around. There was four of us eating brisket one night with one vegan who was eating a banana. And we were all moaning and making our O faces, and he was looking at us like we were fucking nuts.
Yeah.
And I was just like, John, if you're going to like break your little vegan thing like for one night, tonight is the night to do it.
Yeah.
And we couldn't get him to do it. But he was sitting there looking at us all confused.
Very
like, why are you guys
God
enjoying
damn
this
those
food
confident
so much?
Vegans.
You are a foodie as well.
That's a problem.
Yeah, well. you always know good places to go. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, I want to go do Korean barbecue. And you're like, here's three places.
Yeah, I got some spots for you, man.
Yeah. We enjoyed Korean barbecue last weekend.
That was
delicious. And I drank too much soju.
You did.
That usually happens.
Yeah. But it was a fun time. We had a great time, didn't we?
Eight hours.
We went to the One Up.
You were at the place for 8 hours?
No. We left.
8 hour Korean barbecue, yeah. Epic.
That's pretty ridiculous. That's
pretty amazing. We went to the One Up afterwards.
What's One Up?
It's like a barcade in Sherman Oaks.
Oh,
yeah, it was really awesome. Fun. Yeah, Andrew and I played. What was that game? What was that?
Oh,
it was like a Pac-Man ripoff, but you had like
it was like a monkey. Yeah, it was like Pac-Man with a monkey.
Yeah, you had to like go in squares.
Yeah, and that would fill in the squares.
Is it Leisure Suit Larry?
No, I wish. I haven't played that game in forever.
I've been having a hankering to play some Metal Slug lately.
What's Metal Slug?
Well, Metal Slug 2. It's usually on the same machine of like Galactica or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one of those like multi, like a Namco. Does that ring a bell? Mm-hmm. It's like machine like that has like five games on it.
Tekken was on one of those as well. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a good game.
There was something else I was going to ask you about. We talked about you going to art school.
Yes.
How did you get into film and TV?
Well, I went to art school. I guess it's a little bit misleading to say I went to art. I did go to art school.
You painted?
I did. I did go through all the foundation, like life drawing, painting, and everything. Mm-hmm. I've drawn lots of nudes in my life.
Sweet.
And dope.
Art school has some gnarly nudes. It's not what you're thinking. Like, I could tell you some stories about that if you want. Like
normal people.
Are the horror stories.
What are the stereotypes about those nude
things? I mean, there's a Facebook thing that went around not long ago about, like, stereotypical nude models from art school.
Oh, really?
And it was pretty spot on. They left out a few that we added to it.
Yeah.
We revised the list ourselves, but... I mean, we had stuff. We had like a 80-year-old homeless woman who was, I mean, just totally famished, like skin and bones. And she would come and she would wear a rubber clown nose and do handstands. And like, I was a 17-year-old the first time I witnessed this. And you know how mature I am now at 37?
Oh, yeah.
Imagine me at 17 dying laughing and running out of the room and like pretty much pissing my pants. Like.
Jesus. How do you keep it together? Were you the only one trying to
I didn't
hold
keep
back
it together.
Laughter?
No. I mean, we had everything. I mean, from her all the way on, we had a really, really great model and great woman named Aviva who was 600 pounds.
Oh, wow.
And there's actually, you know, there's something really brilliant about drawing mass. It was really actually a fascinating lesson, you know?
Yeah.
And it's easy to laugh at that at first, but then you start actually like taking part in it, and it's pretty amazing, you know. And there's a lot of people in between. We had models that had hemorrhoids that would make sure they show them off, and the guys that would give you like the creepy stares while they're like, there's all kinds of stuff. But anyway, like getting back to the whole art school thing, I studied visual effects in school and computer animation, so it's kind of loosely related to film.
Yeah,
and basically my junior year of college, I was hitting the summer. My uncle, who's a financial advisor, he had a client who was an editor, Chris Lebenson. He was cutting at the time Sleepy Hollow.
He
put me in touch with him.
The Tim Burton film.
Yeah, in 1998. And he put me in touch with him, and they came to New York for the director's cut. And basically, that was back in the old days of film. Mm-hmm. They had a film library and work print they were working on. And he invited me to the cutting room to unpack the library for a day or two. Which turned into 2 or 3 months of an unpaid summer job.
Yeah.
Where that's I pretty much worked for food. Cool. I lived off craft services and they gave me a Metro card.
Nice. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And no credit.
Oh.
But it was a great experience. And it pretty much kind of changed my path. It was one of those things where I wasn't a film major and like I literally took a couple of video editing classes before that, which I did not take seriously.
Mm.
Like we were cutting like on the old VTR, like deck tape to tape. And we had old Bacardi commercial footage from, it was like a Miami 80s spot. It was all super 80s, like Miami Vice style.
Yeah.
And I basically cut.
I can only imagine what you did with
I
that
cut material. Out all the women and basically cut out all the, I cut all these men just giving looks and nods to each other with their drinks. And my teacher did not find it amusing at all.
That sounds like something you would do.
No,
it's a good time.
I still have some gag reel kind of stuff that probably should be deleted.
This is pretty much where my lawyer chimes in.
Yeah, let me write that one down. Let's see.
No, it's fine.
So you were cutting Bacardi commercials.
Well, that was the project footage we had in school. I don't know how they acquired it, but
yeah,
I wish I still had it, but
yeah, that would be fun.
I don't know anybody that has like a 3/4-inch deck that runs anymore, but
that'd be hard to find.
There's like three people in LA probably.
I'm sure there's one somewhere.
Yeah.
But,
so you were, what was your official title?
On Sleepy Hollow?
Yeah.
It was pretty much intern basically, even though it wasn't any like official internship. Okay. I don't even think I got a class credit for it. I just did it because I wanted to, and I just had the opportunity. And I mean, they got me, they did reshoots in Yonkers for a week, where they got me on set just so I could get some money.
Oh, cool.
So like basically for my 2 months of work, I got like $600, I think.
Yeah.
And well, but look,
it's like a summer council, right?
No, but it put me in the right direction. It's like one of those things. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of the whole unpaid Hollywood, like beat up a little guy thing.
Yeah.
But I got to say, you know, it does kind of work for you if you're willing to embrace it, you know? And I got to like thank my parents who were willing to kind of pay my rent for the summer, you know, instead of saying I had to work.
Yeah.
Because that was definitely a luxury a lot of people couldn't have...
Like, sure.
Had, you know, so.
Sure. What did you do after your internship and after you graduated?
I went back to college and I kind of screwed around through my senior year.
Yeah.
Barely finished my thesis. Had to beg for a grade. It was like not one of my high points. Like, I literally, I slept through my thesis presentation.
Really?
How does one do that?
All right. So, long story short, my mother taught at my college.
She what?
She taught at my college.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So, like, she kind of, like, for the most part, she left me alone. She was a fashion illustration teacher, and I'd go to her class and hit her up for, like, $5 here and there, free lunch, and flirt with her students, who were usually the better-looking girls in the school.
Sure.
And pretty much the only time she ever embarrassed me, it took me until, like, the last week of my senior year. So I was basically, I was working on a thesis project. It was, like, a computer animation, and... Basically, the rendering time on it, I was rendering out like 30 seconds a frame or something like that. So like a minute of animation was taking like 6 days to render.
Oh, God.
And I had like I was hitting my deadline for a presentation, and pretty much, basically, my hard drive crashed, and there was no way I was going to get it done in time.
Oh,
so I was like 6 days away, and I just scrambled and got something done to present. Pretty much stayed up for 6 days straight without sleeping, delirious, hallucinations, you name it. And I got something together. I had about 4 hours to kill before my presentation. I'm like, oh, I'm going to take a nap and refresh. 14 hours later, I wake up.
Oh, no.
And it's the nicest day ever. Half my friends and classmates are all already done. They're out in the lawn playing Frisbee and drinking beers at the school. And I'm walking across campus, and it was like total Ferris Bueller's day off. Everywhere I walk, people, the lunch lady is like, go find your mom. She's worried sick about you. She thought, she knew that my computer crashed, knew everything else, and she basically thought I was, like, suicidal. she was sending her students knocking at my door. I was sleeping through it, like.
Wow.
And so, basically, I completely missed my presentation. And at this point, I kind of was like, fuck it, I'm just going to go to L.A., and I know this guy who might hire me again, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But it was like I had to go beg for a grade and had to go, like, present to the chairman of the department by myself. It was really just kind of awkward and embarrassing, you know? But,
yeah.
I thought you meant you literally showed up to the presentation and fell asleep.
No, I never even made it that far. So cool. I basically worked an entire year on a project that I never got to present. So I had to – that was probably the low point in my 37 years of groveling for something, you know?
Well, you have progressed leaps and bounds.
Yeah, I don't do much graveling these days.
Yeah, you don't. Good. You don't sleep through presentations anymore.
I overslept through a director's cut once.
Really? Wow.
How'd that pan out?
I'm trying. It was on Carrie Diaries, I think. I think I made it. I don't even know if I told you. I think I made it from you. But like literally, he was supposed to call me with notes or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I just my alarm was the one day my alarm didn't go off. I mean, I scrambled. Really?
Huh.
I'm trying to remember. I think it was the guy who was like the B movie, like sex star.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
That turned out to be a good episode.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Good enough for rock and roll, right?
All right. So, you slept through your thesis.
I slept through my thesis. And I basically went and got a job working on a fishing boat for a summer and saved up money.
Yeah.
And I moved out to LA and hooked up with the editor I worked with on Sleepy Hollow.
Wow. And did you work with him for...
I did three more films with him, and he got me into the Editor's Guild as an apprentice.
Which three films did you work
on? So I did Sleepy Hollow was the first, which was the internship in New York. Then I worked as a PA on Planet of the Apes with him.
Mm-hmm. The Marky Mark.
The Marky one. Mark one.
Yep. I like that one, man.
Yeah, you might be the only one.
Probably. But
can you explain the ending to me?
No. I can't, but I liked it.
How's that one end again?
I don't want to give it away.
Yeah. Don't worry. It's been out for like 20 years. There's no spoiler alerts necessary.
They come back.
Because Ernie gets arrested by the monkey cops.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. He crash lands at the Lincoln Memorial.
Uh-huh.
And,
which is actually shot at LA Center Studios.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Huh. He looks up, and I believe the Lincoln that was supposed to be there was an ape.
Yeah, it was what's his name? Simos.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, all these cop cars arrive, and they're all apes. So
it's pretty good.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was fun. But what other movies?
So I did that, and then I did Triple X.
Yeah, Triple X.
Oh, the original with Vinny D?
With Vinny D, yep.
Shit.
So that's the film where I got into the Editor's Guild.
Gotcha.
And I thought I was going to be rich.
Well, yeah, you were telling me a story about how you were barbecuing on a Sunday with all the post guys.
Oh, well, I mean, that was one of those movies that really just it had like this totally endless, bottomless budget where they just signed your time card no matter what you put on it.
Yeah.
And like, nice. I like just got in the union, so I was going from PA wages to union wages.
Mm-hmm.
And we were working probably 60, 70 days straight at the time. So I was getting into all kinds of crazy golden time and everything else. And I'm like, wow. It's going to be like this forever. I'm rich. So, and literally, like, it has never happened since.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at one point, and this is literally a month after I got promoted, somehow I got assigned to grill lobster tails outside the dub stage while they were mixing. And I was all pissed off. I was, like, kicking and screaming about it. Like, oh, my God. Yeah. Like, I'm above this now. Like, make the PA do this. I'm not the PA anymore, you know?
Right.
But I was literally in golden time getting paid big bucks to grill lobster tails out in the sun.
That'd be sweet.
Which I would do in a heartbeat now.
Yeah.
For free. Like,
oh, yeah.
Just give me a lobster tail.
Well, the golden time even better.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we ate very well on those shows and got paid well, and times have changed.
Now, did you see the movie in the theater after it was released?
Triple X?
Yeah.
I actually did. I took my parents to go see it at some theater in bumfuck Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And it was...
That's the actual name of the city.
Yeah, actually, it was North Kingston, I believe. But okay. It was like one of these...
North bumfuck.
North Kakalaka. Yeah. No, but it was basically... It was a horrifying experience for me because
I was
when I was just learning the ropes of a dying trade of being a film assistant.
So film.
I was actually cutting 35mm work print, and I was on a bench, and part of our job was to keep the print clean and scratch-free. And, you know, you take pride in that, you know? And, like, even in the end when... For the premiere, we QC'd one of the most trying days of my life was QCing prints for the premiere.
Yeah.
I had to watch that film like 12 times in a day and count white dots on the film and scratches.
Really?
And, yeah. And it was like, talk about torture. They should do that in Gitmo. But
Jesus.
But anyway, like I took my parents to go see this XXX in the theater in Rhode Island, and one of the surround speakers was blown out and crackling. And it looked like, I think like the third reel of the film basically had like, looked like some 17-year-old took his key and just like keyed it. There was like this line wiggling through the entire thing. And it wasn't just like a minor scratch. It was like a gouge.
Really?
And the whole time. And you know what? At the end of it, I was like cringing. I'm like, oh God, mom, dad, did you see that scratch on the print? And they're like, what are you talking about? It looked great.
Yeah.
And it was like at that point,
no one sees it.
I realized that like when you work in this business and you're used to good screening rooms and optimal conditions,
yeah,
you pick up everything, but the general audience is so oblivious to so much. It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least my parents are.
Right. Well, but it's gotta be kind of obviously it was kind of a horror story in a sense, to see this, you know, see the third reel, whatever. Yeah. But, you still probably had some kind of excitement. Like I actually made a film.
Oh yeah. I mean, absolutely. Make a film. To be a part of anything. I mean, that's kind of the weird thing about my transition from film to TV.
Yeah.
Is that, like, if you look at my resume, I started out in all huge blockbuster movies. They were all number ones, and you kind of go back to all of a sudden I ended up on these.
You did Big Fish, too.
Big Fish. That's oh, nice. Probably the best thing I've ever worked on as far as quality goes.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't cut it. I can't claim any, like, creative input on it, but it was really, really, I'm proud to be a part of that one.
Yeah,
I
love
that
movie. It was a good movie. But go ahead.
No, but, I kind of lost my train of thought there. But
I imagine it's kind of cool to be in a theater and go, yeah, I actually have my hands in that.
Oh, there's definitely an excitement to that. But I honestly have trouble watching my shows on TV.
Yeah,
like I kind of. Yeah.
You see all the mistakes, and you're like, there was something I would do different.
You know where the bones are buried with everything. You know, it's like I don't know. Like I'm always self conscious, and I'm never fully content. I mean, I don't know if you feel this way. I don't feel like I've ever turned in a cut where there's nothing I would do different. Where I'm like, I did this exactly, you know. And then I look back at what I did like
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine going back and looking at like a Gossip Girl episode from like 5 years ago and seeing like,
it's rough. I've done it myself. No, it's there's always one or two, maybe, you know, there's a handful of things that you look at it every time and you just wish the cut was that like edit. It was just a little different or, you know, oh, did you know, those times where you actually catch an eye blink that you're like, oh my God, why did I not do that?
Rachel's going to kill me.
Yeah, exactly. you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm always, I've said this before, but I feel like the time where you settle down and go, yeah, that was my best effort ever, is when you have to really reflect and go, am I really doing it better? Or is it, or is there, you know, because I feel like as, I mean, it is kind of an artist kind of standard or mindset is like nothing is ever perfect.
Well, that's it. And, you know, I think my outlook has changed also when I look at my time as an assistant editor to when I transitioned to being an editor.
Mm-hmm.
I used to sit and watch TV and films, and I would just call out all these bad edits all the time.
Yeah, I still do that.
I do it, and like I'm honestly sympathetic now. Now, instead of like holding the editor accountable for it, I'm wondering why they had to do it. Usually the glaringly bad things are usually they're cutting around something, they're fixing something, or they had to get time out of a scene and like jump across the room, whatever, you know. But it's pretty, there's almost always a good reason. So I find I view these things more with a sense of like kind of empathy for the editors, you know, just because like there's almost always a good reason. I don't do bad cuts on purpose.
Oh, no, I agree.
You know,
I agree,
like, so that whole aspect has changed for me, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any projects lined up after? Well, because you're currently not working on Lucifer.
Yeah, currently Lucifer is done. I finished last week. I'm going on to a pilot as an additional editor for CBS called Training Day. I don't know. You may know the film with Denzel and Ethan Hawke.
I'm aware.
Denzel.
I didn't know you get wet.
I didn't know you liked to get wet.
Did you just do the Denzel laugh on purpose?
No.
Sounds like Count Chocula.
Hold on, let me click two things together.
Yeah,
he likes to do that in the movie, just like bundles of money and guns and stuff.
But I love that movie, and I watched it recently once that the prospect of that job came up, and it holds up. It's great.
Oh, it's a great movie. That Ethan Hawke, so hot.
So that's a pilot for CBS this
CBS Mendes. And the Bruckheimers. Yeah,
nice, very cool.
See your boobies in it.
In Training Day.
Mm-hmm. It's a big deal for me back then.
Yeah.
I mean,
she's attractive.
Well, Mr. Skin, can you give us a time code for that?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe look somewhere between like an hour and 12 minutes and an hour and 13 minutes. I don't know. Somewhere in that area. Okay. I don't know.
Fleshofthestars.com.
Oh, boy. We're not endorsing or condoning any of that behavior, are we?
And Flesh of the Stars.
Well, you're not.
Knocked up.
I'm not.
But, you know, go on my Twitter and.
Yeah.
It's for CBS. I'm pretty sure if you're looking for boobs, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't worry, guys.
Do you know who's directing?
It was originally supposed to be Antoine Fuqua who did the original.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And he backed out because his feature is kind of running over and he was kind of not around for pre-production. So now Danny Cannon is doing it.
Oh, nice.
Danny Cannon.
He did, I think he did the CSI pilot and he's a TV guy, but he's done a lot of big stuff. He was on Clemmer's last show.
Oh,
Was it Tomorrow?
Tomorrow People. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I think he was a producing director. I think he was involved in that from the whole run of it.
You know my friend Chris Petras then as well. He worked on a documentary that you guys like you worked nights and he worked days.
The one about the Chorus Line.
Yes, yeah.
I forget all about that. That was a really interesting experience.
Yeah, he said. Did you work nights for that? Was that,
you know, it's that one is such a blur.
Yeah.
And it was such a short term thing. It was like a month I did.
Yeah.
I think I kind of came in and like worked when I could.
Right.
You know, whenever the avid was free. It was pretty flexible and pretty. Somehow the editor loved me and I don't really know what I did. Like, it's just a weird thing.
Yeah. Sometimes it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for any, well, not struggling.
You're going to say astrologers. I don't know.
Astrologers.
Why. I do not know a thing about astrology. I know I'm a Taurus. I don't really know what it means, but it's about
okay.
it.
Okay. You're a car. Bull sign. Okay. So that's all I know.
It's a bull?
Yeah. Taurus is a bull.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool, like Toro?
That's Toro is fatty tuna. Yeah. It's delicious. Tuna.
Oh, yeah.
It is
fatty. I think we're going to have that later.
I'm so fucking hungry for all you can eat.
Fatty tuna was my first screen name in a chat room.
Fatty tuna, really?
No. You do not look at all like a fatty tuna.
You know what my first email was? It was milfman127@hotmail.com.
Milfman?
That does not surprise me in the least.
I had just seen American Pie.
That just shows your age because, yeah.
Yeah, I had just seen American Pie, and like there wasn't a movie I was allowed to see yet. So like, what does MILF mean, Nadav? That my mom would ask me. And I'd be like, just the thing the kids are saying. Don't worry about it.
My first ICQ screen name. Oh. You guys remember ICQ?
Yeah.
That was
long. That was the first one.
Yeah, it was Long Duck Dong on there.
Nice.
Long
which
Duck
is probably which is probably racially insensitive today, but you know,
that was
I love the
you?
Movie.
It totally flew back then.
Yeah, 16 Candles.
Yeah.
Anybody?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Donger needs food.
What's happening? Hot stuff. What advice do you have for any editors out there or soon wanting to be editors or assistants?
Yeah, say someone is like an assistant editor and like they really suck at editing. Like, how do they get good at editing?
Just cut everything you can and practice. You know, it's one of those things that, and I would also say don't be afraid to get into TV. It's one of those things where I begrudgingly, basically I worked for an editor who was a big feature guy, and I kind of had the typical feature attitude where we were better than TV. We looked down upon TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ran off to London where he couldn't take me on jobs. And I was kind of shit out of luck and left high and dry and ended up with a TV job.
Mm-hmm.
And my very first reaction was, I'm going to ride this out. And then the second a feature comes up, I'm out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure I'd still be assisting today if I was in features.
Oh, really?
I really think that. I think the path in to being an editor and getting bumped up is so much faster in television. You get so many more opportunities to cut.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the flip side of that is I know some career assistants in features who are making a lot more money than I am.
You know, right.
Like the sky's the limit and like the hours they work and the traveling they do. I'm a single guy. I would love to go to Australia or send me anywhere for a job. But in television, we don't get that, but I get to cut, which I love. I love telling stories. So,
yeah. There was something else, something about working film. Shoot.
This is.
I'm sorry. It was something
really
very
downhill super fast.
Well, okay.
As a
can I say something? Can As I say
series.
Something?
Yes, JJ.
Mark, I would like to tell you that you were the first person to ever show me how to lock a television show.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank you for that because I learned a lot working with you, and yeah, I really appreciate it.
You know, I need to thank you for something.
Oh boy,
this is getting weird.
Oh, by the way, can I tell you? I have a horror story.
Wait, hold on!
Put your pants
back on. You're trying to block my moment of gratitude.
I am.
See, so anyways,
I got a horror story.
So JJ taught me this little trick all my life using computers. I always wanted to do a reverse delete. I didn't know it was possible. And JJ showed me how to do it.
A reverse delete?
And you know that little
button? You mean just type something?
Yeah.
Like the magic delete button I didn't know existed. Yeah. Like I basically...
Instead of backspace, you can hit another key and it will...
That does the exact same thing?
It'll delete it. No, it won't. It'll delete it and it'll shift it. Shift this.
Oh, yeah, like a smash. Like a smash edit.
And it totally changed all my world of typing. Like,
oh, yeah, I've never known how to do that either.
Oh, really?
Show them right now.
It's just that button right there instead of that one.
Like, seriously, every time I do it, I think of JJ now and I smile.
Yeah.
You're talking the little delete button as opposed to the big delete button?
Yeah.
That's what you didn't know? That's why you owe JJ your life?
It blew his mind.
It completely rocked my world. I smile and think of JJ every single time I do it.
I showed him. I was like, "Yeah, that's it."
I mean, how often do I send you like videos and images of my finger on that button? Like,
at least 3 to 4 times a year. Seriously.
But I gotta say, in general, you are one of the finer individuals I've ever worked with. Oh. I've worked with some great people.
Well, thanks,
business,
man.
So.
I feel the same way about
JJ,
you.
You're engaged.
I know. I can't marry him either.
Christy, watch your back.
I actually have a horror story.
Oh shit! Here it comes.
Oh, this is something that. This is something that happened at a Gossip Girl.
Wait, am I the horror?
Yeah, man.
I'm the monster?
Is it about that time that Mark deleted 6 episodes of Gossip Girl?
No, but that was another person that we know. It happened on a different show down the hall.
Mm.
No, the second time that Mark showed me how to lock an episode, he was showing me how to lock it. And if anybody is familiar with bin display in Avid, it shows all your master clips.
Oh, God.
And a lot of times when you make new clips, like if you consolidate media, you can delete all the new files that were created.
Which I'm still afraid to do.
Oh, yeah. when your bin display is showing all these clips, it's kind of dangerous because they also show like the original clips. And when Mark was showing me, he deleted the original media for the episode that we were on. Oh, and shit. At that time, we were on tape, and we had to redigitize the entire
footage.
A lot of footage to turn the lock over the next day. So,
how many tapes did you guys have to put in?
It was typically about 21 tapes.
Yeah. And you guys have to wait in real time for it to capture.
We had Jesus. Two decks available, so we had them both going. But
yeah.
It took about 2 nights, 3 nights to do.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. But and after that, whenever we'd do it, you have to hold hands.
Yeah.
Like you're holding my hand, like, please delete.
please don't delete everything.
That's a pretty good one.
Yeah. That
accidentally
was,
deleting stuff is always nightmare inducing.
And
the good thing about working on Gossip Girl, though, that I feel like the deadlines weren't as crazy as they are for a show like Scorpion. Like we turn it over and it's like, okay, well in 3 days we're mixing.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like the schedules were laid out a little looser, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case. I mean,
yeah.
Lucifer's kind of been up against the wall a bit time-wise, but not too bad.
Yeah.
So we've done like I did an episode that we shot 10th and aired 3rd. So that one was kind of up against air dates. Oh. So, yeah. They shot them out of order. So.
Wow. What was the? I'm trying to think of
that's the one I cut.
That was the first one to air that you cut.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So. Yeah.
It was kind of an interesting thing to do in a season one. And it kind of worked out, but it was interesting from cutting it because I'd already cut one episode at that point. Or actually, 2 episodes at that point. And getting back in the dynamic of the actors, you know, their whole, the way they handled each other and the way they interacted with each other had kind of changed. They'd kind of grown.
Yeah.
So they had to kind of regress in a lot of ways, and I had to think about that and consider that when I was cutting them, which was kind of it was a fun thing. Yeah,
that's kind of weird.
Yeah,
it's funny that you say that, especially for a first season show. Mm. In Scorpion, first season one, we switched order like 2 or 3 different times, mm-hmm. and it's like just because of the way our show is kind of run, it's mm-hmm. like a procedural in a sense. But there were things that, you know, you had to cover just to make sure the timeline works and stuff like that for the whole thing. But
then you get the ripple effects.
Yeah. And did you have like for your switch from, you know, the 10th episode that aired 3rd, did they give a reason why they wanted to do that?
It was, I think Warner Brothers kind of wanted a more like serialized episode.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was basically kind of more of Lucifer being Lucifer to kind of help develop the character. And I think they felt that, but at that point in the production, they basically felt that they had kind of started to kind of hit their mark as what they wanted the characters to be.
I see.
So I think just to kind of help sell the audience on what they were looking for.
Gotcha.
So they kind of like, they wrote it in with that intention always, where they could just insert it. I mean, we got it cut and we were in the room and like, well, we can play this almost anywhere, you know, and they decided to stick with the plan and everybody was happy and patting themselves on the back for it. So
well, that's good.
Yeah. It was good.
Yeah. We've asked for advice. Just cut as much as possible.
Cut as much as possible. And I got to say this, you know, I've been one even where I've turned down a lot of small little projects and stuff like that. And I look at some people around me who have kept cutting things and they are all doing very well.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, like.
Just ABC. Always be cutting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tried.
Welcome to my hell.
No, but I really think like I look at the people that have. Almost everybody I know who's constantly doing little things here and there have all done well for themselves. So at the end of the day, I think just cut. Yeah. And like I said, don't be afraid of getting into TV versus features. Like I know a lot of feature assistants who kind of toy around with it and never actually come over.
Yeah.
And like I said, I get it. You know, like the money you can make in features is actually pretty good. Traveling is great if you're single and have means to do it. But ultimately, if you want to cut and tell stories, which I like to do.
Yeah.
TV is a place to be to make that transition, you know. And
I agree.
You get them with the right camps. You can do a season or two on a show, and you're co-editing. And next thing you know, you're an editor. You know.
Yeah.
I've watched so many people get bumped up, and it's
yeah.
And really, it's not even just editorial. I look at like the amount of people I've seen go through writers' rooms. You know, as writers' assistants who are now writers.
Sarah Tarkoff.
I can name more than a few. You know.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where I have friends who are still aspiring writers. And I watch them kind of toying around with spec scripts or not pitching to anybody. mm-hmm. and they're putting in the work, but they're not really putting themselves forward. And I'm like, dude, why don't you get into a room? You know, like suck it up, take notes for a year or two.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's the most like surefire track to getting bumped up is TV. I really think so in so many ways. And so some people are just still kind of hung up on the fact that, you know, it's just different.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I some people are just scared of like working hard mm-hmm. or taking a step down, but it's not really taking a step down. It's like, it's, you might be an assistant, mm-hmm. but next season or two, it's like you get jumped, you know, you get a bump up and it's.
Oh. We even like, had like when Vivian was on, she talked about being staffed on a show and then it got canceled and then she didn't work for a while and had to go mm-hmm. back being a script coordinator. So it's like.
Right.
And now she's on staff again and.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not a simple path.
It's not. It's not a simple, but I think it's a good one. I really do. And I just like I've seen more people get moved up there than anywhere.
Yeah.
And I think people get hung up on the idea they watch a lot of broadcast TV and it's not necessarily the best content in the world, and they get hung up on that. But if you're trying to grow, you know.
Yeah.
There's been times where I've had to remind myself, you know, like that the shows I'm cutting are not always art. You know, I'm not making Citizen Kane.
Right. And,
but like, yeah. And then I'm like, you know what? I could be cutting a sweaty guy in a treadmill in reality TV, you know, like it's just one of those things. True. There's professionals that do all those jobs, you know, and it's not necessarily a bad job, you know, but you can't always look at the content you're working and put yourself down.
Yeah.
You know, and like,
so. You know, it's in, I always look at it. It's important to at least a couple of people.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, there's people that are, like they look forward to Mondays or they look forward to whatever day your show airs and it brings them joy.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's exactly it.
It brings my parents joy whenever they watch episodes of Scorpion.
Yeah. It brings my parents joy when they watch episodes of Scorpion. Yeah.
It brings my parents joy also when they watch episodes of Scorpion.
Seriously though.
My dad was a Two and a Half Men fan.
So are mine.
Mark, you have a Twitter account. Is that correct?
I do, but honestly, I don't really use it for anything but reading like Yankees sports news and stuff like that.
You were the first person.
It's really not worth sharing for me.
All right.
All right. Then we won't. Fine.
Well, you were the first person that I knew that actually used Twitter. I'm like, what is this Twitter thing? But you were like totally into it.
Yeah.
And
it's literally I can't tell you last time I've actually tweeted.
Yeah.
I'll retweet some things that I think are important, but I don't really have any followers who I think would care, but.
You know, it's all about those retweet numbers, you know?
Like, I think it's a brilliant, brilliant tool. Like, I have a lot of friends who are artists and stuff like that who work independently.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're trying to promote yourself and you have no budget for promotion,
yeah,
I think it's a brilliant tool. Like I said, for like artists, musicians, stuff like that.
Podcasts.
I mean, when I'm working at shows for Fox, they have a publicity department. They can promote their own shows better than I ever will. So I'm not really, I don't think I'm affecting their numbers with what I tweet.
Right.
So, but like, it's one of those things where I'm a fan of it, and I believe in it to the point where I read Twitter regularly.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of that lurker.
Yeah.
That's fair enough. Yeah. Well, you know, if you want to follow Early Call Time, you could follow us.
We have a Twitter.
At Early Call Time.
Yeah.
Oh.
On Twitter.
Andrew's got one.
I'm at The Real Zuber.
Oh, shit.
I think JJ's.
JJ's got one.
At JJ Geiger 711 in Nadav, you?
Oh, yeah. I'm at a Very Nadav Show. Yeah.
If you...
New time codes...
Yeah. For time codes of, I'm pretty much the entity that Mr. Skin embodies now. So when you want,
wait, did he die?
Don't be damned.
No, he didn't. I mean, it's not a real person. It's a group of people, you know.
You know, there's no one Mr. Skin.
We are anonymous. We are all Legion. We are all Mr.
Skin. You just kind of like ruined Santa Claus for me.
Oh
man.
You can also, if you have any questions. You can email us at earlycalltime@gmail.com.
Yeah.
We also have a number.
You could also text us or call us and leave a voicemail at 267-225.
Chat.
267-225.
Chat.
267-225.
2428.
There we go.
Chat. That's chat in numbers.
Yeah.
And without further ado.
Listen to the outro.
And that's a wrap. Didn't get your fill at Craft Services and you want more? Check out earlycalltime.com for more podcasts and information pertaining to the ever-growing entertainment industry. And remember to tell your friends about us via Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.